Atahunandrapulindapulkasha Abhirashumbhayavanakashadhaya Yenye chapapa yadapashrayashraya Shudhyanti tasmai prabhavishnave namaha. Kirata huna andra pulinda pulkasha Abhira shumba yavana, members of the Khasa races, and even others addicted to sinful acts, can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord, due to His being the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. According to the cult of devotion, generally known as the Vaishnava cult, there is no bar against anyone's advancing in the matter of God realization. A Vaishnava is powerful enough to turn into a Vaishnava even the Kirata, etc., as above mentioned. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said by the Lord that there is no bar to becoming a devotee of the Lord. Even those who are low-born, or women Shudras or Vaishyas. And by becoming a devotee, everyone is eligible to return home back to Godhead. The only qualification is that one takes shelter of a pure devotee of the Lord, who has thorough knowledge in the transcendental science of Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyone from any part of the world who becomes well conversant in the science of Krishna becomes a pure devotee and a spiritual master for the general mass of people, and may reclaim them by purification of heart. Though a person be even the most sinful man, he can at once be purified by systematic contact of a pure Vaishnava. A Vaishnava, therefore, can accept a bona fide disciple from any part of the world without any consideration of caste and creed, and promote him by regulative principles to the status of a pure Vaishnava, who is transcendental to Brahminical culture. The system of caste, or Varnashram Dharma, is no longer regular, even amongst the so-called followers of the system. Nor is it now possible to re-establish the institutional function in the present context of social, political, and economic revolution. Without any reference to the particular custom of a country, one can be accepted to the Vaishnava cult spiritually, and there is no hindrance in the transcendental process. So by the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the cult of Srimad Bhagavatam, or the Bhagavad Gita, can be preached all over the world, reclaiming all persons willing to accept the transcendental cult. Such cultural propaganda by the devotees will certainly be accepted by all persons who are reasonable and inquisitive, without any particular bias for the custom of the country. The Vaishnava never accepts another Vaishnava on the basis of birthright. just as he never thinks of the deity of the Lord in the temple as an idol. And to remove all doubts in this connection, Srila Shukadev Goswami has invoked the blessings of the Lord, who is all-powerful, Prabhu Vishnave Namaha. As the all-powerful Lord accepts the humble service of his devotee in devotional activities of the Archana, his form as the worshipable deity in the temple, similarly the body of a pure Vaishnava changes transcendentally at once when he gives himself up to the service of the Lord and is trained by a qualified Vaishnava. The injunction of Vaishnava regulation in this connection runs as follows. Arche Vishno Shiladir Gurushu Naramatir Vaishnavi Jati Budhi Sri Vishnur Namni Shabda Samanya Budhi, etc. One should not consider the deity of the Lord as worshipped in the temple to be an idol, nor should one consider the authorized spiritual master an ordinary man, nor should one consider a pure Vaishnava to belong to a particular caste, etc. Padma Purana. The conclusion is that the Lord, being all-powerful, can, under any and every circumstance, accept anyone from any part of the world, either personally or through his bona fide manifestation as the spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya accepted many devotees from communities other than the Varnashramites, and he himself declared to teach us that he does not belong to any caste or social order of life, but he is the eternal servant of the Lord who maintains the damsels of Vrindavan, Lord Krishna. That is the way of self-realization. He's herein beginning his reply to the questions of Maharaj Parikshit in regard to the process of creation. By invoking the remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, all classes of men, whoever they may be, can be purified simply by remembering Krishna. The glorification and the remembrance of Krishna cleanses the sins of the hearts of the performer, whoever it may be, whether it be the greatest, most learned sages, the greatest performers of charity, philosophers, mystics, chanters of the Vedic hymns, or whether it be the lowest, most sinful, downtrodden, outcasts from civilized society. Anyone who approaches Krishna or approaches his devotee will perfect his life and go back home, back to Godhead. Just as fire does not discriminate, if you touch fire, whether you are a learned Brahmin or whether you are a foolish, illiterate child, whether you are of a black or a white or a red or a yellow race, fire burns. In the same way, Krishna is all pure, and his purifying potency burns away all of our misconceptions, burns away all of our illusions, whoever we may be. For those who consider that only a certain class of very pious beings can achieve the perfection in spiritual life, it is because they do not have proper faith in the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To think that Krishna, who is non-different than his name, who is non-different than the remembrance of his glories, can only have an effect of purifying those who are in the uppermost stratum of piety within society, is to minimize the greatness of the Lord, who is Patita Pavana. He is the deliverer of the most fallen. And this was Nityananda Prabhu's genius. Nityananda Prabhu was born in a very high Brahmin family, as the son of Hadai Pandit and Padmavati. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was born in the most pious Brahmin family of Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi. And similarly, Advaitacharya, Srivas, they were all very, very learned, pure Brahmins from their very births. But Nityananda Prabhu, his idea was this, that in this age of Kali Yuga, there will be no such Brahmins in the future. Kalo Shudra Shambhave. Everyone will be born lower than Sudra. And to show the power of Krishna in his most munificent incarnation of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, and the power of the supreme weapon of the holy name, whoever is the most sinful, whoever is the most fallen, should be given the Lord's mercy. Because that will give hope to the whole world for the whole time to come in this age of Kali. And it will show the power and the greatness of the Lord. So just see the difference. In the traditional Hindu society of the day, at the time, the Brahmins who were born in their particular caste, they would never initiate anyone who was not a Brahmin. In fact, if you were a Shudra, what to speak of an outcast? If you were a Shudra, you were not even allowed into the temple because you were too contaminated. It was forbidden for a Shudra or lower to chant the name of God, because it was considered that they had no qualification to chant and they would pollute the system just by even trying. So in this way, the Brahmins, their claim was for the Shudras and the lowers, they wouldn't touch them, they wouldn't look at them. Even if the shadow of such a person would touch such a Brahmin, he would jump in the Ganges immediately. If the shadow of such a person would touch their house, they would empty all their water and cleanse the whole house with cow dung. This was the system of the day. And actually, this is how India became so much converted into Islam. Because these lower class people were given no rights and no chance to make any spiritual progress. They were not even allowed to take a mantra on their mouth. And if they did, they would be punished. The idea is they'd just be the slaves of those who are assisting the Brahmins, and by that process, they could die, and they could take their next birth within the Varnashram system. So it was a hopeless situation. So Islam is a religion which was created for the, in a race where there was no varnashram, there was no culture. Everyone was of the untouchable caste. It's a religion for those people only. So when they came to India, they gave great hopes to the untouchable class. You can come in our temples, you can worship, you can chant our mantras, you can go to heaven. So if you had the choice, what would you select? So in this way, the Brahmin caste completely polluted and disgraced the great culture of Krishna consciousness. So Nityananda Prabhu understood this, and he wanted to show the power and the glory of the mercy of Krishna. Those who are most sinful, those who are most fallen, those who are most outcast by society, let them get the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That will show the glory of Lord Chaitanya's mercy to the whole world. And Nityananda Prabhu literally risked his very life and endured so much terrible suffering due to the low-class nature of these men. Jagai and Madhai were drunkards. They would rape women. They would murder people without consideration. They would burn their houses. They would plunder their wealth. No one would even go near them in fear of their lives. But Nityananda Prabhu, he personally selected and made his target to make them Vaishnavas. And sure enough, they became such Vaishnavas, such humble, pure-hearted devotees, that even to this day, we are continuously chanting the glories of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda for making them devotees. So the idea was that Lord Nityananda wanted to show that the power of the mercy of the Lord is unlimited, and we must have faith in that power. And this is not something unique only to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is the universal principle which is throughout the Vedic literatures. When Lord Sri Ramchandra appeared, who was his most intimate associates when he first left Ayodhya in his exile? The first person he became intimate friends and associates with was Maharaj Guha, who was a Naishada. He was an outcast. He was not even allowed to live in the cities or the towns and the villages with other people by the caste system. He lived in the jungles with his own tribe of such outcasted persons. But yet Maharaj Guha became such a devotee. He was so humble to serve the Lord, to chant the Lord's holy names, that Lord Sri Ramchandra blessed him and gave him the highest realizations of devotional service as his intimate friend. Later on, what to speak of an outcast? Jatayu was not even a human being. He was from the bird community. And yet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, I mean not Lord Sri Ramchandra himself, took the role of being his own son. According to the Brahminical standards of the Varnashram system, the ritual is when a person dies, his son is supposed to perform the last rites to the Father. Jatayu was a bird, and yet because of his devotion, because of his willingness to serve the Lord's devotee, Sita, Lord Sri Ramchandra himself performed the last rites and sent him back directly to the spiritual world of Vaikuntha. Ravana was a Brahmin. He was the son of a very great mystic Brahmin. But Lord Ram did not concern himself for the high birth of Ravana. He saw the quality of the person, the guna and the karma. He was envious. His heart was black. And yet, Hanuman, Sugriva, and the other Vanaras, they were subhumans. They were monkeys with tails. But Lord Sri Ramchandra became the intimate associates of such monkeys. And he gave them the deepest, most wonderful realizations of his mercy. And Lord Sri Ramchandra made forever, for all time to come, the emblem of devotion, Hanumanji, who is monkey. Anyone who wants to approach Lord Ram has to first surrender their lives at the lotus feet of a subhuman monkey named Hanuman. Why? Because of his devotion. The power of bhakti. And in the wonderful pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the power of bhakti, Putana was a rakshasi. And yet because she made some gesture to offer some service to Gopal Krishna, Krishna sent her back to the spiritual world to take the place of his mother, just to show the power of devotional service. Doesn't matter who we are, where we are coming from, or what we have done within our life or in all our previous lives. Valmiki was a murderer. Magrari was a hunter. But because they somehow became dear to a devotee named Narada, they all became perfect in their self-realization. And even the greatest scholars, the greatest Brahmins, the greatest saints are reading the literatures of Valmiki Muni and glorifying Magrari the hunter. In fact, Narada Muni himself, who is the guru of Prahlad, the guru of Dhruva, the guru of so many great personalities. In his previous life, he was a Sudra living in a forest. But somehow or other, he became dear to Vaishnavas. And just by receiving their blessings and taking their prasad, he was gradually elevated to the position of spiritual master of the whole world. Not only this world, but even the heavenly worlds. So the more we understand how the most fallen can be delivered, the more we can appreciate the greatness of Krishna. We should not limit the greatness of Krishna. There is no restrictions. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the most munificent, the most merciful. He gave his mercy the most munificently, because in this age of Kali Yuga, it is the greatest time in need of the most mercy. Because people gradually go down and down into the most fallen conditions of life. And it is not a question of our piety or our charity or our past. It is simply a question of whether we are willing to accept the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. That is the criterion by which we will either be delivered or we will remain within this material world. So devotees do not discriminate. They want to give the holy name of the Lord to everyone. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he proved this in so many ways. That dog became dear to Shivananda Sen. He was a dog. In India, people do not respect dogs. But Lord Chaitanya, how much he respected this dog. He fed him prasad with his own hands, and with his own mouth he was teaching him how to chant Harinam. Why? Because that dog somehow became dear to Shivananda Sen. And within a matter of days, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent that dog back to the spiritual world in his original spiritual body. When Mahaprabhu was traveling through the Jarikanda forest, the tigers, the elephants, even the serpents, the lowest, most envious species that no one likes to be near is the snake. Even snakes don't like to be with snakes. That is what a terrible birth it is. Rarely do you see snakes playing together. They're always alone, just... They're so envious. But when Lord Chaitanya was traveling through Jarikanda, he was chanting the holy name so loud and so beautifully that it was charming the hearts, even of the serpents. They gave up all of their venom and they became ecstatic devotees of the Lord. Pure devotees. And the tigers and the deers were embracing and kissing one another, dancing together in the kirtan of the holy name. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. And lower than even such species are the immovable objects. The stones were weeping in ecstatic love. The trees and the creepers and the flowers and the grass were weeping in ecstasy. And in this, it appeared to be an echo, but actually it was not echo, it was the immovable objects loudly in ecstatic love, showing their love for the Lord, chanting the holy names. During that journey, he also came to a tribe of outcast people within the jungles, and he made that whole village into pure devotees, where everyone was chanting and dancing in ecstatic love. When the Lord was living in Navadvip, even the Malecha tailor of Srivas Thakur, just by becoming dear to Srivas, by doing some savor to Srivas, the Lord revealed to him his divine opulent form of Krishna and filled his heart with ecstatic love. In fact, the people who were most opposed to receiving the Lord's mercy were the very, very proud Brahmins. They were the ones that were blaspheming him. They were the ones that were resisting his mercy. And it was for them that he took sannyas. Because he knew that such caste-conscious, so-called egoistic Brahmins They will only bow down if you have a position in the Varnashram system higher to their own. So he took sannyas out of mercy to them to give them Krishna bhakti. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his most intimate associates. One was Ramananda Rai, who by the caste system was considered a Shudra. When Lord Chaitanya embraced Ramananda Rai, all the Brahmins present were shocked. A sannyasi, a Brahmin, is never supposed to touch a Shudra. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was embracing him and soaking him with his tears, trembling in ecstatic love. How is that? Why the Lord took his intimate, one of the most intimate associates of Srimati Radharani, Vishakha Devi, to become a Shudra? Why? Because he wanted to show the world the power and the glory of Krishna's mercy, of Krishna's name. And Thakur Haridas, he was born an untouchable, but yet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu installed him as the Namacharya, the Acharya of the Yuga Dharma for this age of Kali. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally, not only did he worship Haridas Thakur, but he lifted the body of Haridas and danced with it after he departed from this world, and personally performed the funeral rites with his own hands. And Rupa and Sanatan, they were also rejected as outcasts, but Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu empowered them to propagate the most intimate, most confidential knowledge of all the scriptures for the whole world to follow. We say that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is most powerful because it has descended down to the lowest ranks of humanity to bring those people to the highest position. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed the supreme glory and power of Krishna's name. And Srila Prabhupada was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's very confidential servitor. It was Srila Prabhupada that Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu selected to be the founder Acharya of the movement that would spread his glories throughout the planet Earth. And it is quite interesting how when Srila Prabhupada came to the West, nobody ever heard of Brahminical culture or Varnashram Dharma. There was not even a conception of piety as we understand it in the Vedic literatures. Everyone, practically 100% of the population, are meat-eaters. The idea of illicit sex, there's no such conception as illicit sex. In the sense that it's the normal thing. Parents encourage their children to go out and have boyfriends and girlfriends when they're little people. If their children, by the time they're 14, 15, 16 years old, do not have boyfriends and girlfriends and go on dating, then the parents think something is wrong with my child. I have not raised him properly. How have I gone wrong? He's such an outcast. Siri, I am not saying, I am speaking truth. That if a boy is not having nice relationships with young ladies, and ladies are not having nice relationships with young men, something's wrong with them. Maybe they should see a psychiatrist or a psychologist to make them normal. This is the way parents think. What is the conception? And as far as intoxication, if you don't drink alcohol, if you do not later on take some drugs, then you're considered strange. They say square. Square means you're just a reject. You have to do these things. Even in religious functions, you have to drink. It is part of the society to become intoxicated. Yes? Am I speaking correct? Anymore? This is the society. I don't know Europe, but America very much. But Europe, everything from Europe came to America. Americans just made it worse. In this way, what did Prabhupada come into? And yet he was alone amongst such people. Not only that, he was living in the Bowery. Do you know what is the Bowery? The Bowery is famous throughout America for two things: alcoholics and prostitutes. The Bowery, practically every woman is a prostitute. And practically every man and woman is an alcoholic. Now it's become better. But in those days, I remember going through Bowery in those days. Just on the streets, everyone's just laying there with bottles of alcohol drunk, sleeping on the streets. Something like Bombay, except plus alcohol. Terrible place. And so much violence, murders. Srila Prabhupada, Krishna put him there. And yet he had his return ticket. For no extra charge, he could have come back to Vrindavan. He could have come back to Bombay. Sumati Muraji would have given him a nice place here. He could have gone back to his rooms at Radha Damodar. They were waiting, beckoning him, return, return. Why? He remained in the Bowery. His life was being threatened. Whatever little he had was being stolen. Because he understood that his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was a true representative of Lord Chaitanya, wanted to glorify Lord Chaitanya's name in the mood of Lord Nityananda by giving Krishna consciousness to the most fallen, to show the power of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. He remained. And it wasn't easy. Lord Nityananda Prabhu remained with Jagai and Madhai just for a few minutes. But Srila Prabhupada remained in a whole society of Jagais and Madhais for months, for a year, before anyone even took interest in what he was speaking. But Srila Prabhupada knew. He had faith in this verse, and he quoted this verse so often that anyone, whatever their sinful nature may have been, if they somehow take shelter of a devotee of the Lord, they will become purified. And by his great faith and his great compassion, gradually so many tens and thousands of young people, actually people of all ages, came to this Krishna consciousness movement. They began to hear him speak. They began to chant the holy names, to read his books. And gradually, they began to follow these principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. Unheard of in the West. No one has ever heard of these regulative principles. When Srila Prabhupada's godbrother talked to one of the lords, Jetland, who was actually the most pious of all the British. He was the most pious. I believe he was at one time the governor of Bengal, and he was so favorable and sympathetic to the Hindus. He was very charitable, and he was considered by the society of the British to be one of the most noble, honorable, pious persons in the whole society. And he had such an open heart that he asked one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disciples, "Can you make me a Brahmin?" He actually wanted to be a Brahmin. And he said, "Yes, sir. You just follow these four principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat-eating." And he had his famous reply. He's actually most, he will go down in history for his reply. He said, "Impossible. How will we live without these four things? We will die." And he was the best there was in the West. He was the best of the West. "Impossible. Without these things we will die." No one could conceive of this. No one could ever hear of this. What everyone was striving to get, the Vaishnavas are saying, "Give it up." In America, in the West, everyone is addicted to watching television. And what is television? Simply so much romance and so much boyfriends and girlfriends and sex life. And intoxication, meat-eating, and gambling. That's all. There may be some other things mixed in. But that is so much the theme. People are conditioned in that way. And even the big politicians, practically all of them, if you examine, they all engaging in all these activities. The role models of society. In the 1950s and 1960s, every movie actor, every movie actress, every musician, every politician, they all smoked cigarettes. Everyone. It was the, what would you say? It was the prestigious thing to do. And if you see, and all of those old movies and everything, they all have cigarettes hanging out of their mouths. And everyone is very much charmed. Can you imagine what kind of a mentality? They are charmed to see cigarettes hanging from people's mouths. And depending on how you hold your cigarette will be how popular you are with the young ladies and young men. People practice in front of mirrors how they hold their cigarettes. The women do it in a very feminine way, and the men do it in a very masculine way. They actually practice, because this is the standard of your qualifications by how you hold your cigarettes and how you make the smoke come out and everything like that. And how you can talk while the smoke's coming out of your nose and all these things. You're very highly trained. All the politicians, all the big people, they're all smoking cigarettes. And then they all died of cancer. Practically all. Because they didn't even know there was anything wrong. So these are the role models. of the West. Such an unfortunate situation. So Srila Prabhupada came to that culture. And he was sitting amongst the people who were the most degraded within the society of the West. And he would sit down and tell them, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. Compared to the people of the Lower East Side of New York, Lord Jetland was a Goswami. He was a cultured man. These people were not cultured at all by Western standards. Some of these people, their ideas of being high class was to be low class. It's the way it was. I knew a person in the 60s. He was very proud that he hadn't taken a bath or changed his clothes in 3 years. He was very proud of this. And everyone was thinking, oh, such a wonderful thing. 3 years. I've only done it for 6 months. 3 years he's done. Never takes his pants off. Never takes his... Oh, this is... No culture. And these were the types of people Srila Prabhupada went to in the Lower East Side of New York. Telling him no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, bathing 3 times a day. And yet, because he had faith in the mercy of the Lord, he did what nobody else dared. Famous yogis and sadhus who came to the West. But none of them would dare to tell these 4 regulative principles. Some would say, you go on with what you're doing. It's all right. Just meditate. Half hour morning, half hour evening, and you will become God. One famous yogi, he actually met Prabhupada, and he was shocked. You are telling these people to give up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating? Impossible. He said, I've become famous because I'm teaching them that by performing yoga asanas, you can have more pleasure in sex. And that's why people are following me. And you are telling them to give it up, and you have more followers. How is this possible? Not a single person dared. That great sannyasi that came in the 19th century to America and gave some nice lecture. He didn't mention anything about giving up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. If he did, his lecture would not be famous in the West. He did not give them anything. But Srila Prabhupada challenged the whole society. And what was the result? That tens and thousands of such people, of Kiratas, Hunas, Andras, Pulindas, Pulkashas, Abhiras, Shumbas, Yavanas, Kashas, wherever Prabhupada went, he went to all these places. It is explained, the geography. He went to all of these places personally. And through his devotees, and wherever he went, like touchstone, people became pure Vaishnavas. This is the power of the shelter of the lotus feet of a great devotee. This is the power of Krishna in his holy name. And Shukadev Goswami is herein with great, great love and devotion. He is glorifying the power of Krishna. And actually, Shukadev Goswami isn't here in this verse actually glorifying Srila Prabhupada's mercy. Because he was the one that delivered all these fallen classes of outcasts, uncivilized beings, and gave them all entrance into that path of pure devotional service. The scriptures say even if you are born in the family of dog eaters, if you sincerely chant the holy names, you can deliver not only yourself but the whole world. But if one is born in a Brahmin family with all the 25 qualifications of a Brahmin, but he is not a devotee of the Lord chanting the holy names, he cannot even deliver himself. What to speak of anyone else? Our service to Srila Prabhupada and to the previous acharyas is to understand this verse very carefully and understand the glories and the power of those devotees who are dear to the Lord. And to never evaluate a devotee by any material considerations. Srila Prabhupada quotes this very beautiful verse, Arache Vishnu Shiladir Gurushu Naramatira Vaishnavi Jati Buddhi. That we should not have material vision in spiritual subjects. We should not think that the deity is made out of stone. Although by material consideration the deity is made out of stone. But because of the power of God, the deity is not stone. By the power of God, the deity is Satchidananda, non-different than Radha and Krishna. By material considerations, the spiritual master may appear to be an ordinary person. But one should understand that he is representing God. And therefore, he is transcendental. And by material considerations, a Vaishnava may be born in a family of Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, may be born of an untouchable caste, may have a past more sinful than we can even imagine what such a person has done. But according to this verse, if he has taken to the chanting of Krishna's name, if he has taken shelter of a spiritual master, then to even consider the background of that person is to condemn your own life. Jati buddhi. It means your mentality goes to hell. Not only goes to hell, it is in hell. Jati buddhi means your mind is the way of thinking of hell. Naraka. So we should be very careful. We should not be proud. We should have faith in the mercy of the pure devotees, and we should have mercy in the faith and faith in the mercy of the power of Krishna. And here is Shukadeva Goswami. He was the son of Vedavyas. He was of the highest caliber of society. But here his glorification of the Lord with such heartfelt devotion is to see how anyone from any sinful condition can become completely purified just by taking shelter of the devotees and chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. This verse should give us great hope that we can achieve perfection in this very life by the power of the mercy we are receiving. However contaminated we may be, however struggling we may have to even follow the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, if we simply sincerely try to take shelter of the great souls and the instructions they are giving us by the power of their mercy, which is the power of God Himself, we can all be delivered and achieve perfection in this very life. Is there any questions? I could not hear you. Can you turn it up?
In the beginning of your talk, you mentioned about the body changes transcendentally when you take to the science of Krishna consciousness. So what exactly would those changes be? I mean, when you said body changes transcendentally, so what would be the difference? Before and after.
Transcendental means connected to Krishna. The difference between transcendental and material. Material is that which is engaged in activities in forgetfulness of Krishna. And transcendental means that our activities are engaged in the service of Krishna, in consciousness of Krishna.
So would there be any visible changes which you can sort of understand by?
Yes. The visible change is you're no longer acting for your sense gratification, but you're acting in the service of Krishna and His devotees. That is a visible change.
And another question was, you mentioned at a stage
you will dress in such a way, you will move in such a way, that is what Krishna wants. Materialistic persons present themselves. Everything they do is for their sense gratification. Devotee puts tilak on his body to visibly make an offering of his body to Krishna. Devotee will dress in such a way not to induce the feelings of sense gratification in others, but to induce Krishna consciousness in the hearts of others. Devotees will not be going to cinemas and all of these places just to enjoy, but they will be going to temples, and they will be going to places where they can become purified. So these are visible changes, are they not? Devotees will not be sitting in the restaurants eating abominable foods. They will be in pious places eating prasad. Devotees will have japamalas in their hands, chanting Krishna's holy names. Devotees will be speaking nice things to purify others. They will not be speaking all material topics. So anyone can see the difference and the change between a devotee and a materialistic person. The transformation is obvious. It's not that the color of their skin changes, or their color of their eyes change. Sometimes they shave their heads, but sometimes they don't. It's not on a physical level that the body is transformed. But that same body is engaged always in devotional activities. And that makes one's body completely transcendental, completely spiritual. And also they become happy. Devotees become happy when they're engaged in Krishna's service. Another question you have?
Yeah, and at one stage you mentioned about the mercy of Nithyananda Prabhu, that he even sort of gave the Mahamantra to the Islams and the Islamic race, although they were the lowest. And then how come, and converted them to pure Vaishnavas, but how come the Islam community still exists and, you know, it is most unlike the Vedic culture?
Srila Prabhupada glorifies Muhammad in the Islamic religion, in this very purport. It is not that Islam is low. The people that it reached out to were very low. The Middle East is a place where they practically the religion was idol worship. It was very, very cruel, uncivilized people. And Krishna sent the Prophet Muhammad to actually give them real religion, to give them regulative principles, to give them faith in the one God. He didn't give that much information. He didn't give very high principles, but he gave them very nice religious principles. And it was actually Krishna that empowered him to do so. So we are not speaking in any way against Islam. We recognize and respect Islam and those who follow it properly. But what we were saying is Haridas Thakur, because he was born in that race by the Brahminical Society of India, anyone who was born of that race was an outcast. They were not to be seen, they were not to be heard, they were not to be touched. Huh? And Lord Chaitanya took such a person and gave him the highest position as the Namacharya of our Sampradaya. When Haridas Thakur was brought by the Islamic governmental chiefs, they were going to punish him because he was following another religion. Haridas Thakur preached, there's only one God. You may call Allah, I may call Krishna, but it is the same God. And because of the illusory energy, you cannot recognize. So Haridas Thakur himself, he never preached against Islam because he understood that Krishna Bhakti is the ultimate perfection of all religion. Does that answer your question?
But they don't follow the regulative principles that are part of Krishna consciousness in terms of...
They follow other regulative principles, which gradually bring them to a higher spiritual platform. Krishna consciousness is following the Vedic principles, are for those who basically graduate from these other religious systems. They come to higher principles. Because even in the Vedas, for those who are very much addicted to material life, there are regulative principles of how to eat meat. Similarly, in the Judaic, Christian, Islamic religions, we find so many regulative principles of how to eat meat because everyone is so much accustomed to eating meat. So that is also in the Vedas. But it is for those who are very much in the Tamaguna and Rajaguna. To give up eating meat, having illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, puts one in sattva-guna. From sattva-guna you can actually practice pure bhakti. So for different classes of men, there are different degrees of regulative principles. Srila Prabhupada came to give the highest regulative principles. The highest regulative principle is to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna.
Thank you.
Any other question? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.